After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me is my colleague Peter Flaherty, and we are coming at you on a short week. A lot of baseball is going to get underway on Thursday, probably the day you're listening to this, hopefully, as it gets into your feed. As it is Easter weekend, and around the country, that means a lot of teams move up the weekend to start on Thursday. So we're going to jump right in because what better way to do it, Peter? There's a lot of baseball that was played last weekend that was quite exciting. There is a lot of exciting baseball to be played this weekend. Top 25 series, top 10 series, just a lot of stuff has happened. And if you look at the Baseball America Top 25, you'll see some different teams, and you know the format or the structure that we were so used to for the first month of the season is starting to move around as these teams play each other. But I want to start with Clemson and Florida State. They played last weekend. Clemson swept the series at home. But Peter, that doesn't really do it justice, because while Clemson came out really well in the first game, the series got shortened by a day. They played a doubleheader on Saturday due to bad weather on Friday. Clemson jumps out and really takes it to Florida State in game one. They win in a run ruled short in victory. But after that, the next two games played out in a way that Florida State took a lead, a big lead in both cases. Clemson comes roaring back. In game two, they score 8 runs in the ninth inning to walk off with a 9-8 victory. Just a insane bottom of the ninth comeback for the Tigers. And then Sunday was a little more conventional comeback. Florida State gets up after 5 or 6, and Clemson kind of chips away in the middle innings and wins relatively easily if you just look at the final score. But the upshot of all of this is that Florida State is no longer undefeated. We no longer have an undefeated team nationally. And Clemson has firmly staked its case, not only as the best team in the ACC, but you know, right now they're right there, I feel like, with Arkansas for the number one team in the country. If you want to throw Oregon State into it too, that's fine. But we have it as Arkansas, Clemson, Oregon State, 1-2-3. And what Clemson has done has just been really impressive, Peter. They only have 2 losses this season, and no team has more wins than they do.
I was going to say it was a brief conversation between the two of us in our weekly Sunday rankings call, but it wasn't a non-conversation of kicking around Clemson in the top spot. And you mentioned that's how good they've been. And the series win over Florida State, they certainly have solidified themselves as a top, really, 2-3 team in the country. And even on – they won by way of run rule on Friday, but they went down quick 4-0 off a Jaime Ferrer grand slam in the first inning before a 15-run outburst kind of made the final score look convincing. But then on Saturday, they were down 8-1 in the ninth. They roar back and score 8 runs, no Tiger pun intended. And then on Sunday, where it finally looked like Florida State was maybe going to be able to salvage the weekend a little bit, they go up 11-2 in the sixth. Clemson again storms back and wins 14-12. And just looking at how they did it too, this is a lineup that, I mean, they get contributions from everyone up and down the order, and it's kind of a melting pot of returners, experienced guys, transfers. It's a really appealing blend, I think, and model to go off of. like Cam Cannarell, it starts at the top with him. He's a dynamic guy. Blake Wright had, for my money's worth, the best weekend of the best week of any hitter in the country. I think he,
like, literally ever. Who's ever had a better week than that?
21 runs. I think it was
21 runs. Yes. And like, who cares about RBIs? But also, he drove at 21 runs.
21 runs in a week is more productive than a lot of hitters have been this year. I think he's homered in 9 of his last 10. He's just been fantastic in all facets for them. Jacob Hinderleiter, the Davidson transfer, has also really stepped up. He's come through with a few really big swings against South Carolina, now Florida State. Andrew Chufo, similarly, has cooled off a little bit. We had a nice game on Sunday. And then you look at the pitching staff. The bullpen really shined this week, given the struggles of the starters. I guess Ethan Darden had a really gritty, grinded out 6 1/3 in Friday's game. I think they let him go a little bit longer, just given the trajectory that game was on. Austin Gordon struggled on Saturday, or game two on Saturday. And then Aiden Nock didn't have his best stuff on Sunday in the finale, but the bullpen behind those guys really picked it up, specifically Lucas Malmstead, Rob Hughes, Jacob McGovern, and then there was one more guy. It was really those three that carried the load in the bullpen. And when you look at the makeup of this Clemson team and how it's built and how it's structured, and you're trying to kind of poke holes in it, there really aren't many to come by. On a weekend where the rotation didn't have its best stuff against a previously top 10 team in the country, still right there for top 10 team in the country, for the bats to pick them up like they did, and then for the bullpen arms to come behind them like they did and throw that well, I mean, that's huge. And I think that it's going to serve them very well beyond this weekend. The depth that they have in all facets is just, I mean, it's outstanding.
So my question, and it sounds like you're leaning toward, we can, once I ask this, we can guess how you're leaning already, I think, but how good is Clemson? Like, they are a team, like I said, nobody has more wins than they do. They're a team that is, you know, like, they just really find ways to win week in and week out. But they're also a team that is kind of prone to, like, playing these close games. When they swept the abbreviated series against South Carolina, it was a pair of one run games. One of them was an extra inning game. This weekend, get behind 11-2 in the sixth inning on Sunday before they score the next 12 runs. They're down 8-1 in the ninth in game two of the doubleheader on Saturday. Like, those games very easily could have gone the other way, but they didn't. And so I guess I'm just left to wonder a little bit about, like, yes, they're a clear national title contender, but, like, are they playing too many close games? And is this magic eventually going to run out? And, you know, so I looked, and this is as of Sunday. Like, I did not update it with midweek results, but Clemson's 7-0 in games decided by one or two runs. Obviously, that's great. If you look at other teams in the top 10, 7 is not an outlandish number to have played and have had games decided by one or two runs. There are a couple teams with just like 3, but 7 is a reasonable number. So it's not like they're playing too many of these games. And if you look at the bullpen, Peter did a good job of outlining the guys that they've been relying upon. And, like, you know, Rob Hughes has become a really, really good closer. And so I guess if they're going to have that kind of bullpen and they have a lineup that, you know, can score runs in bunches, you know, maybe it would be more ideal if they didn't find themselves down 8-1 going into the ninth inning, but they are the kind of team that if you give them an inch, they're ready to pounce and capitalize. And so I don't really want to nitpick them too much, but, like, I do also wonder, do they at some point have to stop playing with fire as much as they did at least this weekend?
It's an interesting question. I mean, great teams win ugly, great teams win close. Clemson's done both of those, and none of them have come in fluky fashion. Like, this is a supremely talented team on both sides of the baseball, I think. I wonder if it might bite them in in a weekend ahead. And I think going back to your original question, the ceiling of this team is absolutely a national championship. Now, would I like to see them beat some of the teams on their schedule coming up in more convincing fashion than they did, like Florida State, which is again a nitpick because Florida State was ranked seventh when they swept them. But you know, I'd like to see them assert their dominance a little bit against lesser opponents. But I think you certainly run the risk, just how everybody does, of having that. I mean, it happened to Clemson last year, where they dropped two games in a regional, kind of in a flash, and you're kind of looking around, being like, "Wait, our season's over." That, I mean, it could happen to anyone. It could certainly happen to Clemson again this year. But I think where there's no 2023 LSU, there's no 2023 Wake. Like there are like right now, Clemson is a top two team. Right now, Arkansas is the top ranked team. But there isn't like there are teams we feel more confident in, but like there's not really one club we can kind of hang our hat on and be like, okay, this team is 100% going to be playing for a national championship in under 3 months. So I think that, you know, that only adds to their ceiling of national champion, but I'd be curious to see if they kind of, you know, push the pedal to the metal, so to speak, in series coming up. Like they have they're going to be favorites in all these series coming up. I'm curious to see how they look against like NC State, what they do at Notre Dame, like at Miami is an interesting one this weekend. So I'm curious to see what they do. I feel like it could bite them in a series coming up, but again, it's hard to nitpick what they've done at this point.
Yeah, they're going to be on the road the next 2 weeks. Miami at Miami is tricky. Just ask UNC and Virginia about that. But it's a perfectly winnable series. Miami is 14 and 10 for a reason. And then at Notre Dame, you know, it 2 weeks in a row being on the road is tricky for Clemson. And they are going to have played three of their first four AC series on the road, which is a little bit fluky in the scheduling, but there are tests ahead. This weekend won't be easy for sure at Miami. Flip side of this is Florida State. They came in 19-0. We've talked about them a fair amount and how much improved they look going into this year. Florida State did bounce back from this weekend with a resounding win against Florida last night in Jacksonville. They went 14-3 in 8 innings. They won the season series for the first time since, I think it's 2015 against Florida. That was also the last time they beat them in the neutral site game in Jacksonville. You know, that tells you one thing. And the team is 20-3. I, again, don't want to sit here and nitpick Florida State. However, Peter, the bullpen, how much of that is a concern? We can feel really good about the rotation. You know, I think Leiter, Whitaker, they were pretty solid. Jamie Arnold was great. Do they have a bullpen problem, or was this fluky / Clemson just being really good?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think, one, starting with the rotation, Jamie Arnold is firmly in consideration right now as one of the top sophomores in the country. Cameron Leiter, he didn't have his best stuff on Saturday, but he had otherwise been, you know, really good to this point. Connor Whitaker has also been pretty steady. He also didn't have his best stuff. I think with FSU, in regards to whether or not they have a bullpen problem, I think it's somewhere in the middle of Clemson being really good and like them also having a legitimate problem, because I think that one weekend should not erase the 20 previous games where, for the most part, they had thrown the ball really, really well. They do have some talented arms, but it's certainly raised more concerns on my end about the depth in the back end. They have very good options and guys that threw well and bounced back really nicely against Florida, and a Florida team that is maybe the most confusing in the country, but the one thing that's not so confusing is that they do have a pretty solid lineup and they threw well against it. Brennan Oxford's a nice option. Andrew Armstrong, they can deploy him in a number of roles. Carson Dorsey has gotten hit around a little bit and touched up in his last two starts. I really like the stuff that he has. Connor Holtz, similarly, Noah Short needs to, I mean, when you're a subby sidearm guy, you need to come in and be able to pound the zone, throw strikes, and get ground ball outs. And Noah Short hasn't been able to do that on a consistent basis. And when he's around the strike zone, he's excelled, just how a lot of pitchers do. And then there are a handful of other guys that have thrown the ball well. So I think that I am now on high alert when it comes to the FSU bullpen. I think it is absolutely an area to watch when it comes to a potential red flag. But, like, I am interested to see how they do this weekend against Louisville, Boston College the following weekend, really just in the stretch of games ahead, to see if it kind of reverts to the form it had in the first month of the season, or if they, you know, if they cough up a game at Louisville, heaven forbid they cough up two games at Louisville this weekend, if they have any hiccups in the following week. So I think it's something to absolutely monitor.
Florida State is entering a stretch where they really need to win these series if they want to, like, be taken seriously as a top 10-ish type team. It's Louisville this weekend, it's at Boston College, and then it's home to Miami. And, you know, they got to be winning all three of those series. Like, again, Miami, Louisville, they can be tricky potentially, but being at home, you gotta be taking care of the business in those. And so we'll see where Florida State goes from here. But that bounce back against Florida was quite encouraging, just from a, you know, mental standpoint. And how are they going to react to the first time they really got punched all season? And they really got punched this weekend at Clemson. So that was good to see from that standpoint. This weekend, the ACC provides us with a couple really good series. Duke is playing Virginia. I feel like we've talked about them a fair amount, though. So while that is a super regional rematch, Peter, what I want to talk about is UNC and Wake. And Wake, who we have also spent a fair amount of time on, they bounced back. They won a series against Louisville. It wasn't perfectly clean at all. Josh Hartle was better for the first few innings and then gave up a bunch of runs to Louisville, but Wake Forest scored way more runs. And so they won the first game, and then Chase Burns did Chase Burns things, and then Louisville won the third game. But that in itself felt like a step forward. Just winning a series was an important step for Wake Forest. Meanwhile, UNC went out and swept Georgia Tech, which, coming off of their series loss the previous week at Miami, felt pretty important. And so now UNC goes to Wake Forest, and I find this series to be quite interesting. I don't really know what to expect at all. Both of these teams have pitching problems in their own way. You know, we've been over Wake Forest's plenty. UNC is just kind of trying to piece things together in the rotation. I just don't know how that's going to go against a potent Wake Forest lineup. But at the same time, they pitched really well against Georgia Tech. So I'm curious to see what it looks like as UNC hits the road, even if it's a short road trip to Winston-Salem.
Yeah, UNC, starting with them, at least to this point, I think that they have rather quietly been one of the better teams in the country. I know that we have them ranked 19th and solidly in the top 25. But right now they're 22-4, 7-2 in the ACC. After their series loss at Miami, which has been kind of a house of horrors, as you alluded to, they bounced back really nicely with a sweep of Georgia Tech, who I'm still, like, struggling to figure out a little bit. I think they're better than they have been in years past. But, like, it's this year, it looks like that sweep is going to look a lot better than it has in 23 and 22, at least, I think. And then, like you said, the rotation so far, I mean, it's held up well. And, like, for the most part, they're trotting puppies out there with three freshmen in Olin Johnson, Folger Bowes, Jason DeCaro, and then they have most recently slid Shea Sprague into that Sunday spot, which I'm a little surprised it took to this point. I think he's a really good arm and is a great guy to trot out in, you know, potential game three and just in general. And they can, I mean, that lineup can really swing it. Alberto Ozuna and Casey Cook have kind of led the charge to this point, and then Vance Honeycutt is Vance Honeycutt. Like, there's a lot of chase, there's swing and miss, but there's also, like, you know, he brings and provides maybe the most tantalizing tool set, him and Braden Montgomery, in this year's college draft class. Parks Harbor has also been really good. Luke Stevenson, like, 1-9, they can really, really swing it. And any of these nine guys can beat you at any time. So I, right now, I'm pretty high on the Heels, and even with their freshman rotation, I've been really impressed with like how DeCaro has looked and Bose has looked, Johnson and Sprague as well. Sprague being the experienced guy, I kind of like them this weekend. And then with Wake, man, it is like, it's looked better. The bullpen is such a major concern, and really the pitching outside of Chase Burns is a concern. Like, I have no doubt that on Friday, Chase Burns is going to go out and look really, really good. He'll flash his thunderous stuff. What happens with the offense is TBD, but he's going to go out and give them 5, 6, 7 really good innings. Josh Hartle, I have zero idea what to expect tomorrow. Later this afternoon, because I keep expecting him every week when I turn on Wake, because, you know, they're one of the teams that I watch the most, and I'll pop them on and I'm expecting like 23 Josh Hartle to just like, he's going to just snap out of this funk. He's going to be locating everything like he had in 23. He'll kind of flash it's not the loudest stuff, but it's certainly not terrible stuff. Like, he'll flash the cutter, he'll flash the advanced feel for the breaking ball, pinpoint control. None of that's really been there for the most part this year. And then the free bases are just like, it's so, so painful to watch. And again, like I said last week and probably the week before that, I can't even imagine what like Coach Walter, Coach Mascara are thinking in that dugout, because I'm sitting here, whatever day it was on Tuesday, watching the Liberty game and being like, holy crap. Like, they are just like, they hand games away. Like, they gave Liberty 16, I think it was, free bases, and they luckily held on to win by a run. It's fascinating to watch, honestly. Like, I think that's a rather kind adjective to use. Like, it's something else, and they need stability and they need it fast, because the teams are going to get tougher. The season, obviously, it gets longer, and it's not a sustainable model what they're doing right now for postseason success. I think Will Ray, Zach Johnston, Hayden LaFeu to an extent, those are three guys that I think have emerged as key arms. They clearly desperately need Cole Roland back. I'm not sure when it is. It sounds like it'll probably be in the coming weeks. There hasn't really been a solid timetable to that one. Blake Morningstar, again, has thrown the ball better. But outside of Burns, it's kind of just like, close your eyes and peek through your fingers when you're watching them on the mound. Because it's tough right now. And then the lineup, like, yes, it is, I think, gotten better in the grand scheme of things. Nobody's pitching in Nick Kurtz. He's walked 28 times in 85 plate appearances. Seaver King has come on. Jake Reinisch has been really solid and steady. Merrick Houston, Winnay, and Tellier have all swung it well. Like, the offense, I think, by and large, is going to be able to produce enough to keep them in most, if not all, of these games, at least this weekend. But I just have major, major concerns about the bullpen and anyone not named Chase Burns, really.
Also of note this weekend, in the ACC, well, I guess not, these series aren't so notable, but I do want to just call out that Virginia Tech and NC State moved into the top 25 this week. That's Virginia Tech's debut. NC State is back after a week away. NC State is back because of the way it took care of business against Duke, winning a series that was a little bit up and down, but that raised more questions about Duke with me. Good on NC State for bouncing back from its sweep at Georgia Tech the week prior. Peter, we've spent probably no time on Virginia Tech on this podcast. They are off to the best start they have ever been in the ACC, and they play Pitt, which I know we said some good things about Pitt in the early part of the season. They're already fading. And so Virginia Tech comes in at 8-1. That could very realistically, they're at home against Pitt, that should be 10-2 and could very realistically be 11-1 by the end of this weekend. And I mean, the Hokies are, this is not something I saw coming at all. I figured they might be pretty solid, but I certainly didn't think that they would be, you know, off to an 8-1 start in the ACC, having you know, swept BC on the road, won a series at Louisville, and swept Notre Dame at home. Like, that, it's not the hardest ACC schedule they could have played, but they've played two road series already, and they're 8-1 in the conference.
Yeah, they're very, very much for real. And like you said, the slate so far of Notre Dame, Louisville, and BC, it's not a world-beating schedule to this point, but winning a series on the road against anyone is hard. Going to Jim Patterson Stadium and winning a series against Louisville is difficult, especially they bounce back from a Friday night loss. They win two in a row. BC last year made a regional and has looked scrappy at times this year. I love, again, with Virginia Tech, it's a really well-rounded team. The lineup is super, super old and experienced, and I say that in the most positive of ways. Like, I mean, Ben Watson coming over from Division III Elizabethtown, where he put up video game like numbers for his career there. He's hitting .385 so far. Chris Cannizzaro, they were lucky to get him back again in 24 after a solid 2023 season. He's hitting, I think it's just a tick below .400 with 15 extra base hits. He leads the team with 31 RBIs. Christian Martin has been scalding hot as of late. He's hitting right around .350. George Washington transfer Eddie Micheletti has looked good. And then we haven't really even gotten to the headliner with Carson DeMartini, potential likely day one draft pick at this point, where he's got 13 home runs to his name. He's hitting .320. Clay Grady is an outstanding defender, but also packs a little bit of a punch with the bat. One through nine, like, this is a super, super deep bunch, and they are not the benefactors of an easy schedule. I know that if you're listening right now and you're kind of looking at who Virginia Tech has played and you might scoff at it, but I'm telling you, these guys are all really, really good players. They all can hit, they all can swing it. They're going to cause a lot of problems for ACC teams going forward, and they have a bona fide, if not already right now, certainly a future ace in freshman Brett Renfro. He earned the Friday spot coming out of fall practice. He's been outstanding in the role. He's pitched his way to an ERA just over 3 with 37 Ks. Wyatt Parliament, a Rutgers transfer, has transitioned really nicely into the rotation. Griffin Stieg as well. Like, all of these guys, and you look at the pitching staff, they have an exciting blend of stuff, but everyone is around the strike zone. They attack hitters. You kind of, again, not to harp on Wake and their free base issue, but they do not give opposing teams anything. And the depth carries over to the bullpen, where they have a ton of weapons as well. And then going back to the lineup, like, they will just wear down. I watched a lot of the Boston College series, and they will just wear down opposing pitching staffs over the course of nine innings. Like, that is going to be a super, super difficult team to get 27 outs against and come out on top. They just gas out opposing pitching staffs. It's really impressive to watch. It's kind of just a really slow, painful death. And I'm really bullish on them. I'm excited to see them get, I'm already looking forward to next weekend when they take on Wake, because it's their first like really big test. And I think that'll be a good barometer for where they stack up against some of the best in the conference. But they earned every bit of that top 20 ranking this week.
They have won 11 of their last 12, really rolling right now. And they certainly look like they're back to where they were a couple years ago in terms of just competing at the top of the ACC. And we'll just have to see where it goes from here. But again, they are home against Pitt this weekend. So feels like another great opportunity for Virginia Tech to rack up a series win. Let's switch gears here and let's talk some SEC baseball, which we're going to do here in a second. But first, check this out. All right, Peter, there are a number of places we could take this SEC discussion. I guess, though, the place to start is with LSU in Florida. That was the national championship rematch in Baton Rouge last weekend. And Florida comes out on top. It was one of those series, this happens a fair amount in college baseball, or at least it feels like it does, where one team kind of controls the first half of the series and then another team controls the second half. And in this case, LSU had the first half. They were one out away from winning the series on Saturday. They can't close out. They can't close the door in the ninth inning. Florida ties the game, goes to extras. Florida wins on Jack Caglione go-ahead home run in the 11th. And then on Sunday, Florida comes out. Cags pitches incredibly well. Florida races off to a run rule victory. Florida wins the series. So we can talk about how LSU has now lost back-to-back series and they're 2-4 in the SEC, and that's really bad. And we can look at it and say, like, great job, Florida. Like, you've won two top five series, like, to start SEC play. You found a way to beat A&M at home. You go on the road. You win in Baton Rouge. And that's all true. That's the world we're living in. But that's a little black and white for what this series actually was. And that's just how thin the margins are in the SEC, though, that Florida is sitting here at 4-2 and can feel pretty good about itself, although what happened on Tuesday is what happened on Tuesday, and Florida doesn't feel good about itself, and I am not. I refuse to be drawn into that conversation again by myself. But LSU, you know, like, I don't know. I didn't take a whole lot from this series except that, A, Florida's offense is really good. B, LSU has a bit of a bullpen problem right now, maybe more than a bit of. They have a bullpen problem right now. And C, Florida deserves a lot of credit for how they respond to losses. They are 8-1 this season in games following a loss. You know, they've lost a lot this season. The fact that they've already had 9 of those opportunities is a lot, but also the fact that they're not letting all of these losses snowball on them, I do think there's a lot to be said for that.
I think, and I don't know how you feel, I think when I heard you talk about it, you probably feel similar. I left this weekend after this series just a lot more confused about both teams. Like, Florida, it was super impressive how they punched back. It was like, I feel like everyone was kind of expecting them to lose this weekend at Baton Rouge. And then you're sitting here looking at a team around 500. Where do they fall into the top 25 after that? It's the exact opposite. They pull off a really impressive series win, in a convincing one at that, with a run rule win on Sunday. LSU on the, like, I don't really know what to make of Florida at all. That lineup is really deep. I think that's the one thing I do know. There are 6 to 7 guys, 8 any given night, really, like, 6 or 7 really good guys who can beat you and drive the baseball. The pitching is the pitching. Jack Caglione is kind of the only certainty right now. Brandon Neely has, I don't want to jinx him at all or jinx Florida, but he has seemingly reverted back to his 2023 self. And then with LSU, I know that Florida kind of has worn the cone of shame to this point in the SEC, and people have given them a lot of flack, and they say what they will about the record, and it is what it is. But LSU optically right now, it looks good. They're 20-6. They're number 9 in the country. But I think that there are some pretty apparent issues on this team. You brought up the bullpen, which, yes, they don't have the depth they did last year. I do like that 1-2 punch of Luke Holman and Gage Jump in the rotation. I think that is as impressive as you can get, maybe outside of Arkansas in the SEC, and I guess Tennessee to an extent, depending on who you slot in there. But the offense, it's White and Travinsky have looked really good. Jared Jones has routinely flashed his impressive raw power. He's produced at a really solid clip. But then other than those two, it's really like Stephen Malam has kind of had a solid season. Mac Bingham came on as of late. He had a good weekend last weekend, at least in games 1 and 2. But outside of those two dudes, 3, Travinsky, White, and Jones, it's a little bit of a struggle, right? Like, I don't want to say they're thin because they're not necessarily thin, but they're certainly a lot less scary and imposing as definitely last year. But I think just in general, like, this weekend against Arkansas, and I know we'll probably get into it later on, like, I'm curious to see how they fare against that pitching staff, because on top of the bullpen, I worry a little bit about the lack of offensive depth and how far or how much that might hinder them come June.
It is interesting. They mess with their lineup a ton. And some of that is just that's who Jay Johnson is as a coach. Like he likes to tweak his lineup. They have all this depth, but they don't have, like, last year they had star power depth. Like Dylan Cruz was Dylan Cruz, but then there was like, oh, well, like also there's Trey Morgan and Jordan Thompson can rake and, you know, Cade Beloso, and, you know, we're squeezing like X, Y, and Z into the lineup. And like Braden Jobert is like gonna, like, is he going to be in? Is he going to be out? Like that dude hit like 18 home runs in 2022. Like, how are we going to fit him into lineup? And like, they aren't doing that this year. Now it's more like, you know, how do we fit Josh Pearson and Mac Bainham and like these guys into the lineup? And they're just not proven, and they haven't stepped up. And that's making some of these pitching issues more acute. So yeah, they're in a weird spot. They're especially in a weird spot when you look at the schedule coming up. It starts this week. Well, I mean, continues this week with Arkansas. They got Vanderbilt. They got Tennessee. They got A&M. Like it's a really tough stretch here. That said, there's no reason to panic. I am like you. I'm confused a little bit about both Florida and LSU. Florida is also like, we've delved into the Florida issues plenty over the last couple of weeks, but I just can't help myself here. Kevin O'Sullivan said, he told the reporters after Tuesday's game that they're going to stop having Mondays be an off day. Like you're required to take an off day by the NCAA. Traditionally in college baseball, that's Monday. Sully said that they're moving their off day from Monday to Wednesday. They don't play on Wednesday anymore this year, so they're going to practice on Monday, play on Tuesday, and then have Wednesday off. And other coaches have done that before. Like it's not a unique thing, but it's noticeable that he is that fed up.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them, all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
With the way midweeks have gone, and like he should be really, they're like 3-5 in midweeks, I think it is. And at some point, all those losses are, if they keep taking them, like they can't keep taking all these losses and still be a top eight seed. They might not even be able to keep taking these losses and still host. Like, they at some point have to start winning games more consistently. I'm willing to sit here. Like, on Sunday, I wrote, I'm done worrying about Florida's weird losses. And then they lose on Tuesday in the fashion they do. And I'm right back to being worried about it. Like, I can't pick a lane, but they're good, but they're inconsistent and they don't have enough pitching. And that is ultimately probably going to be a real problem if they can't fix that in the next 2 months.
Yeah, I was with you right there and just kind of accepting Florida for who they were. I think if they had gone out and even lost just a competitive game to FSU,
just be normal.
Right, just a normal, like, solidly played, well-played baseball game would have been like, okay, you know what, they lost to a really good team. They didn't really lay an egg, and then they lose in that fashion, and you're, like you said, you're right back to not square one, but, like, you're right back to being like, okay, like, what is this team, you know? How far does the pitching take them? So they're as confusing a team as I can remember. And this weekend they've got another tough series against Mississippi State. Hopefully on Tuesday they can break this midweek spell against FAMU, Florida A&M. I mean, if they lose to FAMU, we might be having a lot of we might have a different tone here next Wednesday, but hopefully they can get back on track. Like, this would be a perfect time, and just even in this abbreviated stretch, for Florida to rip off like six or seven wins. Series win over Mississippi State, win over Florida A&M. They have I think a pretty favorable matchup against Missouri the following weekend, and then we're right back to where we were yesterday or 2 days ago now with a midweek at Florida State. Like, if they can go into that with, ideally, I think they'd want, you know, at least five wins and two series wins, potentially even six, and get in a little bit of a rhythm, figure out where guys fit. That'd be huge, because they then entered that gauntlet of South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Arkansas, and Tennessee the next 4 weekends. So I think if there's any window to kind of figure out who fits where and where they best fit, it's right now, because the sledding gets a heck of a lot tougher here going forward. And then going back to LSU, I think that they have a quartet of really viable arms in the bullpen, like Fred Ulloa, Gavin Guidry, Javon Coleman at times, and then Kate Anderson, depending on where they use him, have all been good. Nate Ackenhausen is a lot better than the back of the baseball card might suggest. I'm kind of waiting for Justin Lower to turn that corner as well. Like, they have the pieces, just how they have the pieces and the names on offense. They just got to get rolling, and they just need more out of the bullpen. I'm also curious to see what might happen with the Sunday starter role going forward. Thatcher Hurd last year struggled like he is doing right now before really turning it on. And he was the winning pitcher in the national championship game. But, like, Kate Anderson is ultra, ultra talented. He's going to pitch on the weekends for him next year. I would be floored if he didn't. But I'm curious to see if he might thrust his way into that Sunday spot should things continue to snowball. But,
well, that's a good transition point, not to cut off your further bullpen point. But by the time you listen to this, maybe they'll have figured out who they're pitching tomorrow. But LSU announced a rotation for the Arkansas series of TBA on, and then Holman and Jump on Friday and Saturday. So they're leaving Friday and Saturday alone. They're on a short week this week. They're sticking with that Thursday the following week, and then they're back to normal. So Hurd is not, he's not going to start on Thursday. I don't know how they're going to use him this weekend. I think he's going to go to the bullpen, I would guess. And he pitched pretty well in that role last year. That was where he refound himself before they were able to put him back in the rotation late. Maybe that helps with the bullpen stuff. I don't know if they're, once they decide on a starter for Thursday, I don't know if it's going to be a bullpen game, if they're just going to try and get three out of a start. I really don't know. But yeah, all of a sudden they also have this third starter issue, despite the fact that they should have one of the better rotations in the SEC, if not the country.
Yeah, no, that was an excellent segue on your part. And then just kind of speculating who they might throw tomorrow. Anderson threw two, I believe it was. Tuesday night against Southeast Louisiana. He only threw 36 pitches. I really don't think he's going to start tomorrow, though, or today. I feel like it screams like bullpen type day, 3-3-3. Or
I mean, like I could see Ackenhausen. But I
was going to say Ackenhausen.
Yeah, do you like Ackenhausen at the back end? Because on Saturday when they needed that game, like it was Ackenhausen with the game on the line. So like, if that's where you were with him a week ago, do you move him to the front or do you want to keep him there? Like he is equipped to go long. Like they have him stretched out. So if you wanted a more traditional starter, like he's probably the most logical one with Anderson having pitched on Tuesday.
Yeah. And then also looking at guys who didn't throw on Tuesday, Javon Coleman did not throw on Tuesday.
He's a guy who has pitched on the in a weekend starter role before Gage yes. Jump was healthy. They started him.
That would not shock me. Dare I say, like Christian Little hasn't thrown in a little bit.
He has pitched in SEC games though. So like that puts him ahead of some of these other guys that haven't. Like Justin Lower did not pitch last weekend. I don't believe. Like Griffin Herring has been stretched out before. I don't know quite how long he's stretched out right now. I mean, they have options. You're probably right, though. We're probably looking at a 3-3-3 situation.
And I feel like in that, like it's got to be some iteration in looking at who's available and who's probably hot. It's got to be some variation of Javon Coleman, Gavin Guidry, Nate Ackenhausen, maybe like Justin Lower can gut out an inning. I think he threw under 25 pitches on Tuesday. I think you got to rely on those four to give you nine good ones and potentially steal a win. It's going to be a lot easier said than done, but at least just keep you in the game.
On the Arkansas side of this, they kind of toyed with their rotation as well. As they're not on a short week. They played on Thursday a week ago there, but they did flip Molina and Tigert to give Tigert an extra day of rest. So they're going Smith, Molina, Tigert. And this is if LSU is pitching at a level that, like, we're sitting here, like, being kind of harsh on LSU because, like, they're LSU and they can take it. Like, or they were the number two team in the country in the preseason. In the same way we've harped on Wake Forest, like, this is what we're doing to LSU. This is, like, other teams, we might not be being this hard on them. But they do present a pretty difficult test for these Arkansas hitters. And Arkansas has pitched better than anyone else in the nation. They have the best pitching staff. Their offense has not been quite to the same level. And they have a really tough task, especially against Holman and Jump, but really all weekend long in terms of getting something more going offensively.
Yeah, and like the offense, and I wrote about this earlier today, or I wrote about it yesterday now. The offense and lack of maybe firepower has been completely masked just due to the pitching staff being the best in the country. The rotation is outstanding with Hagen Smith, Brady Tigert, and Mason Molina, but the production also carries over and firepower carries over into the bullpen where they have guys like Cody Frank. Will McIntyre has been sensational this year to this point. Gabe Gackle, the true freshman, has been really good. Gage Wood is like everywhere you look, whether it's in the rotation or in the bullpen, there is an arm that you can feel confident in. Like there is not an arm out there on that staff that you're not going to feel confident in when they're toeing the rubber. And I think that offensively, it's been really nice to see Vahava Aloy kind of come into his own a little bit. He's hitting .327 with 20 RBIs in his last 15 games. I kind of figured it was only a matter of time before he got going after his slow start, but if he's able to keep that going as the meat of the SEC schedule, through the meat of the SEC schedule, that's going to be huge. And then elsewhere, like it's not the biggest, most household names that you've ever seen. Like Jarrett Sprigg-Lott is hitting well. Ben McLaughlin's hitting well. Kendall Diggs is probably the most. Kendall Diggs and Peyton Stovall are the most prospecty of the bunch, hitting .302 and .310 respectively. But it's not like there's not a ton of power in the lineup. Like they'll shoot a gap and put a ball over the fence every now and again. But like we talked about it a little bit pre-show, but I'm curious to see, and it might never happen just given the caliber of the pitching staff. And it wouldn't totally shock me if it doesn't happen, at least for a little while. But there is going to come a time and come a game or a weekend, a series, or even a regional or a super regional where someone or guys don't have it on the Arkansas pitching staff and their lineup is going to have to go out and win the game. And I would be really curious to see how a game like that would unfold. Right now, we saw it a little bit on Saturday against Auburn, a game they lost 8-6. It was Arkansas actually went up 4-0, and weirdly enough, it was the bullpen that kind of had a hiccup, Gabe Gackle and Colin Fisher. But I'd be curious to see if the lineup can kind of keep them in a slugfest type of game or a slugfest series, because that is, for as good as Arkansas has been, and they are 1,000% deserving of the number one ranking right now, that is my one kind of concern, is the offense.
Elsewhere in the SEC last weekend, you had South Carolina sweeping Vanderbilt. That was a very loud result. South Carolina coming off of a tough series loss at Ole Miss the week before. Vanderbilt coming off of a sweep of Auburn. And Vanderbilt's now a confusing 3-3 in the SEC and, you know, not feeling anywhere near as good about itself. South Carolina, I mean, they looked like the high-end team that, like, I know they can be. Like, I think there are a lot of reasonable questions to be asked about both of those teams, but for what South Carolina was able to do, the offense had been maligned early on. There'd been a lot of angst. We talked about it here after the Clemson series. Certainly they found themselves against a really good pitching staff in Vanderbilt, and they went to work, and their offense played really well. And so that was all I needed to see from South Carolina. Like, I feel very good about them going forward. Do I think that they're like world beaters? Like, no. Do I wonder how well they're going to play on the road? Yes. Like, that continues to be a bit of a concern. In Founders Park, like, they're really, really hard to play against. And like that's not changing. And that's going to make them, that alone is probably going to get them in the hosting conversation, if not just earn them a host spot.
Yeah, and I think right now they're what, 16-1 at Founders Park, 16-1 at home. I think it's something like that. And like you said, we brought up some of the concerns with the lineup and would they be able to hit enough to kind of keep itself in the series this past weekend. They more than did that. Ethan Petrie has looked a lot more like Ethan Petrie now recently, especially in the last four games. Cole Messina and Gavin Cassis each had solid weekends, especially Messina. Dylan Brewer continuing to hit against high caliber pitching has just been huge. Kennedy Jones has really, really stepped up all season, but especially recently, he continues to be scalding hot. But like you, I was most impressed with the pitching staff. And you talk about, you know, some of these teams that can really pitch, like Arkansas. When I look at South Carolina's pitching staff and kind of holes to poke potentially and potential weak links, I don't think they're as deep as Arkansas, but man, that rotation of Eli Jones, Dylan Eskew, Tyler Pitzer, it wasn't in that order. Tyler Pitzer got the ball for the first time as a starter on Sunday and was outstanding. I think he didn't allow an earned run across 6 1/3 with 9 strikeouts. He's been excellent in his freshman year. Eli Jones set down the first 18 hitters in a row on Friday. He's looked really good. Dylan Eskew had a little bit of a hiccup, but the bullpen picked him up, and they have a really good quartet of bullpen arms and really just arms in general they can deploy in different roles. Matthew Becker looked good. Ty Good threw the ball really well. Parker Marlott has been excellent in his true freshman year. And then, man, my personal favorite guy to just watch and go after hitters is Garrett Gainey, the fiery left-hander. And you talk about a guy that's in that blinders down attack mode, like, I don't care who's in the opposing batter's box type attitude, to put it nicely. He fits that to a T, and you can give him the ball twice a weekend. He's an I want the ball type of guy. He wants the ball in big moments, and I think having someone like that is so huge. So I think with South Carolina, I'm a little with you. Like, I'm with you in, like, I want to see how they do in big road series. I want to see how they do away from Founders Park. If they're able to host, I think that's that goes a long way for its ceiling. And then with Vanderbilt, LSU, A&M, like, and this is reading their schedule in order, and they've got LSU, A&M, and Florida the next three weekends after this week, and it's kind of like month plus is extremely, extremely tough for Vanderbilt. And it was recently announced that Andrew Dukanich, he got Tommy John surgery, and he's out for the year, and it's super unfortunate for a number of reasons, but especially that this was – like in the innings that he threw this year, he had looked really, really good. He flashed big time premium stuff. He was looking like a serious weapon for him, and he goes down, and that's a big piece that they've got to replace. But I think the rotation this weekend, which it was announced, and it's today, is Grayson Carter followed by Carter Holton and Bryce Cunningham are following Grayson Carter. I forget who pitches after who, but
yeah, I really like, on a short week this week as well, notably.
Yes, but I really do like Bryce Cunningham. I'm curious to see like what happens with that rotation going forward. Like, do they continue to roll with Futrell? Do they maybe call a little bit of an audible? I'm not really sure. I think that's a guy that they're gonna like. He's got to really not have it for the next couple of weeks for them to probably even think about moving him off the Sunday spot. But he is the one arm that has stuck out just at this point as a little bit of an underperformer. But I've been super, super impressed with Bryce Cunningham. Carter Holton still somehow is somehow still pitching better than his ERA suggests, which is in the mid to high threes, I think. Those two guys are really, that's a legit 1-2 punch that they've got. But with Futrell, and then you start to wonder a little bit about the bullpen, maybe outside of guys like Ryan Ginther and Miller Green, where those innings are going to come from. Like, Ethan McElvain has looked good recently. You can use him as a midweek guy or a bullpen. They've done both. I'm still really impressed with Vanderbilt. I am looking forward though and curious to see how they fare, like especially next weekend at the Box and the following weekend down in College Station. Like, those are two huge series. I think that the lineup has, like, it's still a really productive group, and I think better than anticipated going into the year, at least better than I'd anticipated. But it's come back down to earth like a tiny bit. I think RJ Austin is going to keep producing. Alan Espinal producing at this clip has been huge. And then they've got the typical guys of, you know, Jonathan Vastine is swinging it well. Cam Kozel, he was a highly touted freshman. He's swung the bat well to really no one's surprise. Like, they have a lot of nice pieces. I'm intrigued to see how they hold up through this gauntlet that they've got staring at them.
We could spend like another hour talking about SEC baseball. We have 12 SEC teams ranked in the top 25. Like, it was wild. Georgia swept Alabama. There was a lot that happened. However, as I told Peter before we hit record on this thing, I want to give the Big 12 its due. I feel like the last couple of weeks I've just kind of been like, we ran out of time before we got to the Big 12. So we are going to get to the Big 12 now before we run out of time. And it was we can sit here and be like, that was a weird week in the Big 12 every week. I need to stop myself from doing that. However, it was a weird week in the Big 12. Oklahoma was playing West Virginia. They start the series. This is Oklahoma that had started 6-0 in SEC or in Big 12 play, having beaten UCF and swept TCU last weekend. They then no-hit West Virginia in a 13-0 win on Friday. They're at home. They're in Norman. They've just thrown a no-hitter. They turn around and get swept in a doubleheader the next day to lose the series to West Virginia. So that was the kind of weekend it was in the Big 12, I guess. I don't have any concerns about Oklahoma for having gotten swept in a doubleheader. You know, congratulations on throwing the no-hitter. Like, maybe next time spread some of this out a little bit better. But, you know, they're still looking really good. West Virginia, I remain relatively confident in, despite J.J. Weatherholt continuing to be out. They needed that this weekend, particularly after getting no hit. But Now West Virginia off to a 4-2 start in Big 12 play. They've been up and down, but a big one this weekend at home against Oklahoma State. So we'll see where it goes from there. But you know, an interesting weekend to say the least in Norman.
Yeah, and in Norman alone, and then really just an interesting season as a whole in the Big 12. I think you have to, in terms of storylines, at least to this point, it has to start with TCU, who started undefeated. I believe it was
13-0,
and now they are 2-7 in Big 12 play with series losses to or at Kansas, home against Oklahoma, home sweep against Oklahoma, and then swept at Oklahoma State. And I think that, like, they have a real lineup problem. I think it's we're deep enough into the season. We're almost halfway through at this point where you can make statements like that. Outside of Logan Maxwell, who's hitting around 370, I think it's 367, and Anthony Silva, who has swung the bat reasonably well. Like, he's a defense first guy, can really pick it at shortstop, where he's a plus defender. It is very, very hard to look at and circle any of these guys in the lineup that you're, at least as an opposing pitcher, that you're really scared of. And I don't mean to kind of poo-poo on TCU here a little bit, but I really, really am concerned about the offense. I think that they still have some quality arms and quality pieces, both in the rotation with Peyton Tolley and Cole Klecker, and then also in the back end with Luis Rodriguez, Bennett Belt. Zach Coyer's been really good. I'm just really, really worried about the lineup. Like, when you go to Oklahoma State and you score 5 runs across 3 games, and this is not meant as a diss on Oklahoma State, but Obrate Stadium is a notoriously, like, hitter-friendly, one of the most hitter-friendly ballparks in the country. And when you go there and you score 5 runs against a not-so-stacked pitching staff and in an extremely offensive-friendly environment, like, that is, to me, a huge red flag. And again, Oklahoma State played really well. They deserved to win that series. Their only loss was a 1-0 loss at the hands of Peyton Tolley. But, man, like, I am super, super worried about the offense. And then...
Well, so they had 11 hits this weekend. 11. And if Tolley doesn't go CG shutout on Friday night, they probably get swept again. Like, they got out hit 5-2 on Friday night. They happened to win because Tolley was incredible. And Oklahoma State made 3 errors. That didn't help the Pokes at all. But, like, to call, like, this is like a 6-year-old callback on this podcast. Like, Mike Linnana and I, like, used to, like, we had a literal, like, panic button sound effect. I don't know where that went.
You should bring that back.
But, like, it's time to hit that panic button on TCU. Like, their offense is averaging 4 runs per game in Big 12 play. They've played 3 weekends of Big 12 play. And furthermore, they're now 2-7 in Big 12 play. The Big 12 previously has been sitting at like a 24-game conference schedule for the last few years. They're at 30 games this year. So it's not really instructive to go back and like find previous Big 12 teams that started 2-7 and like, did they make the tournament? Did they not make the tournament? Because things are different now. What I can tell you, though, is that the selection committee takes a dim view of teams with losing conference records. Now, it's not a deal breaker. Look no further than Oklahoma last year in the Big 12 for a team with a losing record that made the tournament. However, it's not where you want to be. And for TCU to not have a losing conference record this year, that means they have to go 13-8 the rest of the way, which in theory should be perfectly doable for them. Like, this was the runaway Big 12 favorite. Like, we can run through all the good things about TCU in theory, but they aren't playing anywhere close to that right now. And like, it's getting late quick. They are home to Houston this weekend, and that is a must win. That's not hyperbolic to say at all. Like, they have to snap out of it this weekend against the Cougars.
100%. I think also the good news for TCU, like you said, the Big 12 this year is the Big 12. I think anyone could take a series over anyone. It wouldn't shock me if they go out and win all of their series the rest of the way. It wouldn't shock me if they go out and lose the rest of their series. It's such a difficult conference to get a hold of, and I want to give a little bit of love as well to Kansas State, who right now sits in first in the Big 12 with a 17-6 overall record, 5-1 in conference. And it's interesting, they haven't thrown the ball that well on the mound. Like, outside of Jackson Wentworth, who has been a workhorse out of the bullpen, they've thrown him for a handful of innings at a time, multiple times each weekend. He's got a 1.76 ERA with 44 Ks to just 6 walks and 30 and two-thirds innings. They really haven't thrown the ball all that well as a team. And Owen Berema has somehow started 8 games already. I think early on they used him as a Friday guy, and then they also trotted him out as an opener on Tuesday. Just, I thought that was funny, but it's largely been the offense that's been the driving force behind their record. And it's a legit lineup with, like, there are 5 to 6 guys in there that you can feel really confident in. Kalen Culpepper is the household name, and he's done well, but Brady Day, 12th or 13th round pick last July of the Atlanta Braves. He's a guy that I really, really like. It looked like he got a little bit stronger between the end of last season and this year. The bat speed has ticked up. He's driving the ball more. He's impacting the ball more. The contact ability and barrel skills have always been there, but this newfound power has been a huge boost. He leads the team in almost every major offensive category. I think he's third in doubles, but other than that, he leads the team in every statistical category. Chuck Ingram, the Wichita State transfer, has been solid. Nick English and Brendan Jones have also been really good. So Kansas State, they're on the verge of being ranked this week. A really impressive club in general. They have I think a really intriguing series, the most intriguing, at least in the Big 12 this week or this weekend, when they take on Texas. I think that's a huge one for Texas. They're 15-10 overall, just 4-2 in the conference. And then also a big one for K-State to maybe establish itself as the top dog or one of the two top dogs in the conference, at least to this point. And I know it's going to change a lot as the season goes on, but that's a series I'm really interested in.
Yeah, I'm definitely highly interested in that as well. I think that there's a pretty solid chance that we rank the winner of that series in this next poll. Although I say that, and now I realize Texas lost to Corpus Christi last night. So, you know, who knows? Texas has more than a little bit of Florida in them. But K-State, definitely, like, we came so close. It came down to them and NC State for the last spot. And, you know, it's a big weekend for K-State to get the horns at home. Even if Texas has been up and down, like, that still represents a fair amount. And, you know, K-State is 5-1 in Big 12 play, but they've also played Cincinnati and Houston to this point. Those are two solid teams. I think Houston might be pretty good, even like better than solid, but, you know, those are also still Big 12 newcomers. This is maybe a little bit different. And, you know, K-State, the schedule to this point has been good, not great. And, you know, frankly, I don't know what Texas is. Maybe I'm putting too much emphasis on the brand name. It's start like this week with Texas, next week at UCF, the following week at Oklahoma, then Oklahoma State. Things really stiffen up for K-State starting now. And so getting off to a good start at home this weekend against Texas is could really have a nice momentum building effect as they get into a meatier portion of their schedule. We did not really give Oklahoma State their flowers. I would say that this was a team that I came into the season pretty high on. They were up and down early. They lost a series at UCF a week ago, but they come back. They win this series against TCU. They go into this week. They're at West Virginia. Then they're home against Oklahoma. Two really big weeks here. If Oklahoma State is going to do anything this year, I think it kind of has to happen right now.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. This is an opportune time for them, at least in my mind, and I know you think as well, for them to kind of make a move. And they're sitting there and lurking at 16-9, 3-3 overall. They have, like, this series against West Virginia. I know the Texas K-State one is the best in the conference this weekend, but this is a huge one for the pecking order, just in general in the conference standings. And then also when you get down to crunch time, and when it comes to Selection Monday, it's going to be a big one, I think, as well. And they've got Oklahoma next weekend. These are two really big ones. I think the most surprising thing about Oklahoma State to this point has been maybe their lack of offense. They're typically a very offensive heavy club, a bunch of guys who can hit for power, threat to leave the yard at any time. And they have guys like that. Carson Benj is a premier draft prospect, likely first round guy, at least in my mind. Aiden Miola is off to a nice start. Freshman Avery Ortiz is going to be a good one for them. They have the pieces there. It just has not been as loud or as thunderous as I maybe anticipated. I know Nolan Schubert has kind of battled injuries. He's worked his way back. He had a nice game on Tuesday against Wichita State. But I think the most positive development for him is how they've thrown the ball. They only have their team ERA of 3.58, I think, ranks really well nationally. I don't know exactly where it is, but in today's day and age in college baseball, a 3.6 ERA just about of what they have, that's really impressive. And College of Central Florida transfer Brian Holiday has been excellent. Sub 2 ERA as a starter, 51 Ks to just 8 walks in 43 innings. Two distinct breaking balls, pounds the lower half of the zone with his fastball. Really impressive feel of the pitch. Lefty Sam Garcia gives them a different look. He's also been largely really good outside of a couple of hiccups. They have some nice bullpen pieces in Robert Kranz, Gabe Davis. There's a lot to like on the pitching staff. If the bats can pick it up and prove to be more formidable, I think that this becomes a really, really intriguing team, and one that I think could take a lot of people by surprise.
All right. So that's the Big 12. Elsewhere this weekend, if you're looking for under the radar series, I would say Troy and Southern Miss. The Sun Belt was very topsy-turvy. One of these weeks we'll break down the Sun Belt. This was not it, though. But Troy and Southern Miss is an intriguing series this weekend. And this one is super under the radar. But as an Ohioan, let me just shout out Bowling Green and Xavier. The Musketeers, you know, are a team to watch in the Big East. And Bowling Green is undefeated in MAC play. I don't have how long it's been since they've been 9-0. In conference play, but they were, I think when they ran it to 7-0, it was the first time since 1995. To give you a little bit of an idea, massive start to the season for the Falcons. This is a program that was cut for like a month during the pandemic in 2020. So, you know, shout out to the Falcons and Kyle Hallock for getting them to this point. Tough series this week at Xavier, doesn't mean anything to the MAC standings, obviously, but shout out to the Falcons.
Yeah, they're off to a great start. The fighting DJ Newmans, he's been outstanding on both sides of the baseball, but in all seriousness, they do have a really good club. It's great to see, like you said, given the fact that it was cut for a little bit, and it might be a little bit of a changing guard atop the MAC standings. And then you alluded to it, but the Big East sneaky has been, to this point, it's really competitive at the top of the conference with Creighton, St. John's, Georgetown. You can even throw Seton Hall in there. All four of those teams have played really well, especially Creighton and St. John's and Georgetown. They're sitting at 17-4, 17-5, and 16-8, respectively. I'm curious to see how it all shakes out as conference play rolls along. Georgetown, probably the biggest surprise of the bunch, but another kind of fun under the radar conference to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. And plenty of great baseball to be found around the country, not just in the conferences we always spend the time talking about. So check out some baseball outside the ACC and the SEC. I promise it is, it's a good time too. That's going to do it for us here on the Baseball America College Podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to the Baseball America Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, hit that subscribe button. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Peter is at Peter G. Flaherty. And we will be coming at you again next week with another edition of the Top 25, another podcast, and all that great content over at baseballamerica.com. So be sure to check it out. Enjoy the baseball. Have a happy Easter if you celebrate. And just in general, enjoy the weekend. Hopefully the weather cooperates for everyone around the country. We will talk to you next time. For Peter, I'm Teddy. Thanks for listening.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.